Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 145 of the Savage and Cruddy Sports Podcast. Here for you again on another Wednesday night, May 31st, 7:11 p.m. It's the first episode in a while where we have no future Celtics or Bruins to talk about, so a bit of a change of pace in that regard. But it is, unfortunately, the Celtics funeral episode and more. But before we get into all the good stuff, Ryan, as always, how are you?
Bad, for all the reasons you just mentioned. Put it bluntly.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's at this point, anyone with a brain could have saw this coming, which is how this... Yeah, okay, sorry. No, just really quick. Anybody with a brain could have saw this coming. I feel stupid and violated now that I thought that after watching the Celtics come back from a 3-0 deficit, you know, to toy with our hearts, just, you know, rip them right back out. It's just anyone that watched the end of Game 6, as we'll get into a little bit after Moment of the Week, probably should have known this was coming. You play with the game, you play with fire, you're going to get burned eventually. They, you know, escaped it in Game 6, thanks to Derek White mainly, and then Game 7 just... It seemed like everything that could have gone wrong right from the tip went wrong. So,
yeah. Game 7 was a huge letdown. We'll get into it later for a variety of reasons. But before we do, moments of the week, mine is some quick hockey points. First, Bruins related. Looks like at this rate, they might not be signing 2019 sixth rounder Tyus Mäntykivi. His rights expire tomorrow. So just something to monitor there for anybody who didn't know. He's done pretty well in the Finnish league the last couple of years, but I don't know, time's running out to sign him. And I saw a lot of people, you know, as expected, chirping Latvia for having a parade in wherever it was in Latvia for winning the bronze medal at the World Championships. And I don't really get that because
Latvia, pretty big accomplishment.
Latvia's never been a big hockey powerhouse. They've only won 31 medals in Olympic history, and that was their first time winning a medal at the World Championship. So I think chirping them for throwing a parade is lame.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, you know, but you know, people just love to hate.
It's a medal. It's a pretty hard thing to get, I'd have to assume. Like at that level, it's not like it's like a participation medal or like something childish like that. Like that's a pretty big and impressive thing, I would have to assume.
Yeah, especially for a non-traditional, like, big hockey market.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then just the coaching and GM carousel in the NHL has been heating up. Andrew Brunette went to Nashville. I think that's going to be a huge loss for New Jersey. I think he's a huge reason they made the playoffs this year. Spencer Carberry goes back to the Washington organization, formerly of the Toronto of the Hershey Bears, and spent time with the Marlies and the Maple Leafs, I believe. Don't quote me on that. So he goes back to Washington, where he was with Hershey in the past. Brad Treliving from the Flames, known most recently for the Tkachuk trade in Calgary, was fired, and now he is the replacement for Kyle Dubas. And Craig Conroy, this is a little bit of a while ago, he is the new GM in Calgary, replacing Treliving. So got some movement there. Sounds like Peter Laviolette or John Hines will end up as the Rangers head coach. So we'll see that probably in the next couple of days, I imagine. And we'll see, of course, more movement as well as the offseason goes along. But just wanted to update some people on that stuff if you know, haven't been keeping up with it. If you're, you know, kind of your hockey brain's kind of off in the offseason, which is understandable if your team's out. But any other thoughts from you on the hockey stuff?
Not really. The GM stuff to me, I mean, I don't obviously follow hockey, although I am, as we termed last week, the residential hockey guru on this show.
I can't believe it's my moment of the week and not yours.
Yeah, I know, right? I was the one that should be talking about this. Other than that, not really. Like you kind of went through the bigger one that I could give my thoughts on, and the people crapping on a team winning a bronze medal. Like, again, it, like you said, get over yourselves. It's a medal for a team that doesn't win, or for a place that doesn't win a whole lot in the sport of hockey. So,
yeah.
Losers for the people that made fun of him.
Yeah. Yours is in a different vein, though, with the NFL rule changes, and I'm pretty much on board with you here.
Yeah, I cheated a little bit because this actually happened last week, but with all the stuff we had to talk about, I mean, the Celtics stuff, kind of forgot about it, kind of forgot to add it to the outline, but I'll do it for this week. Yeah, the NFL changed the kickoff rules once again. It's become a hot topic over the last couple of weeks, because not a lot of people are all that happy about it, and I can't say I blame them, because it seems like every day we inch closer and closer to playing flag football more than anything else. But if, in case people missed it, the NFL changed the kickoff rule that now any kickoff fair caught inside the 25-yard line automatically the ball is put at the 25 for the team going on offense. The actual rule itself reads for 1 year only, which I did not know. So that's good. This seems like it's going to be like a type of a trial and error type of thing, which is good. Puts the ball at the receiving team's 25-yard line. If there is a fair catch on a free kick, kickoff, and safety kick behind the receiving team's 25-yard line. Of course, the reason for that, as the NFL will always kind of defer back to, is player safety. When it comes to voting, in case people miss it, the Patriots are one of five clubs, along with the Ravens, Bengals, Bears, and Lions, who voted against the rule change. The Raiders abstained, and the remaining, of course, 26 teams all voted in favor to change. I did hear today, though, listening to Zolak and Bertrand, they brought it up. It might have been Felger and Maz. Somebody brought it up, saying that apparently the commissioner had to step in because there were more teams that were against it, but it seemed like overnight he kind of changed their minds. I don't know what those 10 teams were. Like I said, Matthew Slater, I heard today during OTAs, he was blasting the NFL for it. Travis Kelce, who we've been very vocal about some of the stupid stuff he says, for once, I actually agree with something he said. He was on his podcast with his brother talking about it last week. And he said, quote, "I think this is absolutely stupid. I don't think this is making the game safe. I think it's making it more boring and taking a lot of excitement out of the game's opening play." And then in Travis, in typical Travis Kelce fashion, he had to add on there that this is whack because he talks like a man child. But I agree. Like I said, I agree with him. Like, how many times have we seen, you know, an electric opening kickoff? You think of guys like Devin Hester, guys whose career have been based off of special teams, like him, like Matthew Slater, just to kind of hit home here with the Patriots. It's stupid. Like, I get player safety and everything, but I don't know. You like Travis Kelce said, you're taking the excitement out of the game. Yeah, it doesn't happen a lot. But when it does, it's like it gets people on their feet. You know, it completely changes the dynamic of the game, whether it's out of the half to start the game, whether whatever it may be. So just dumb. Like I said, I'm glad it seems like it's only going to be for a 1 year type of trial run everything. Hopefully it does not stick, because this is one of the dumber rules they've implemented.
Yeah, sorry for just assaulting anybody listening with headphones on by accidentally not knocking my mic over.
I've done it before. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, this is just another step towards killing the kickoff, which I don't entirely understand, but I don't know.
How many guys get like that you can remember? At least I'm blanking on like a massive injury or something that's happened, but I feel like, again, maybe it's just because they've been doing these things and you're seeing less and less, but they make it seem like, I feel like every time there's a kickoff, there's some sort of massive, drastic injury that occurs. And I can't say I remember a lot of cases where that's happened. So again, I get where they're going with the player safety and everything, because that's kind of the de facto thing they default on. But in this case, again, like, how many get, plus half the time the ball is going out of the back of the end zone anyway, so no one's really returning it to begin with. And again, that one rare instance where it does happen, you could see something exciting happen. Now that's not going to be the case.
Yeah, it's, I don't really see any positive to it, to be honest with you.
Yeah. But we shall see. Maybe it'll work for them. Hopefully not, because again, like, it does bring some excitement from time to time.
Yeah, like, kind of a no-brainer. Like, seeing a kickoff return touchdown is awesome, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, it's weird.
Yes, it is. I don't
have any crazy, huge thoughts about it, but yeah, I hope it doesn't stick after this year. That's the end goal, I think.
Fair enough. I'm glad we're in agreement.
Alrighty then. Celtics.
Yeah, those wonderful Celtics. I thought we've changed up the Celtics format a little bit. Sometimes it's game recaps. I don't think we have to recap game 6 or 7. We know what happened. Of course, game 6, the electric Derek White tip-in, which gave the Celtics credit in that game 4, although they did try to choke it away. They did play to the buzzer. You know, Derek White, a very smart play where, you know, if you listen to anyone that talks about basketball at a high level, they always kind of say the same thing of like, oh, on those plays, don't forget about the inbound passer, because they could do some crazy stuff. Derek White ends up saving the Celtics season. Then you go into game 7, you have everything that that happens in that game. And I thought we'd kind of just give our overall thoughts on, you know, the end of the season stuff, wrap it up. So if we, you know, share the same thoughts, have different opinions, that's where I'm going to start. Everything you did leading up to game 7, you know, getting crawling out of the 3-0 hole, finally looking like the Celtics team that we knew and loved last year, playing lockdown defense, changing it, you know, leading to your offense and getting out and running. Derek White having that play that I don't think you could argue, if the Celtics were to go on and at least win the series, you could probably put up there with like the Dave Roberts steal, the 28-3 comeback, the Vinatieri snow, like all those great moments in Boston sports. Derek White would have been up there top 5, maybe even top 3. That gets washed away now, which sucks. So like that was my big takeaway. I don't know if you felt the same thing or just kind of your overall, just maybe going back and, you know, the thought process on the play. Did you think it went in when it happened, or were you kind of like my dad watching it? He was like, there's no way he got that off in time.
Yeah, I thought it went in, to be honest, because I mean, I didn't have the suspense of seeing it live, but I thought it went in. Yeah, like,
oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot we had this discussion where you missed this. You fell asleep and not good. But
yeah, I was a boulder. I couldn't get up. So yeah.
That is unfortunate.
Yeah, it was unfortunate, but like watching the replay, yeah. Thought it went in. Like, not really too much else to add.
Fair enough. Yeah, all right, my second takeaway then. And it might be a controversial one to some people, because yes, he did not have a great series overall. But I thought the people after game seven that were trying to slander Jason Tatum and give the old, like, oh, put together a good back-to-back game, that type of thing. Like, the guy comes out and rolls his ankle on the first play of the game. The fact that he played 41 minutes was good enough. Not good enough, obviously, because they lost the game. But, like, at least he goes out there, tries to gut it out. 14 points, 11 rebounds, 4 assists. He talked about it after the game where he basically said he was a shell of himself. So, like I said, that was my big takeaway from that, was just how crazy I thought it was that people were trying to slam Tatum after the performance that he had in game seven. Cause like, man, I'm gonna remind you, you know, this guy did have 51 against Philadelphia to get you to the Eastern Conference Finals. Listen to Stephen A. Smith talk about it. He's a guy that in, I think it was elimination games or maybe game sevens as a whole, averages 28.8 points per game, shoots 50% from the field and shoots 48% from deep. Look, I'm not going to make excuses. That's the easy thing to do here. But like the people that were trying to come at Jason Tatum for being like, oh, this guy didn't step up to the occasion again, like was bad in this game, didn't really show up. Probably pretty tough when you're playing with a high ankle sprain and you roll it on the curves the first play of the game.
Yeah, I agree. But what I did think about, I don't know who said this, but I wish they shot him up with the stuff that Patrick Mahomes got in the Super Bowl for his
ankle. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Then he would have been a superhuman.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that. It didn't really seem like, I mean, I'm sure he got treatment at halftime, but like didn't really show any sort of, I mean, again, you're playing, football is probably different. You do get to sit on the bench a little bit more than, in this case, the NBA player, running up and down the court as much as you are. But, like, there really was no, and that, again, it's going throughout the entire game. It's going to get worse. There was really no improvement whatsoever. Again, try to gut it out. I've seen some people say, too, maybe it was, you know, maybe showed it up a little bit, like the grimacing and everything, kind of knowing that the cameras were on him. But, again, like, I'm not going to crap on the guy for that. He stepped up more than most of the players on the team in Game 7. Like outside of Derek White,
if you get hurt, you can't show pain.
True. Yeah. You get, you just
not allowed.
Your leg could be hanging off. Just play right through it.
Not allowed. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Then my other point leading kind of off of that, again, just to kind of go back to dumping on the Celtics here, is I feel like, and I don't know if you agree with me here, that injury and watching him get hurt, kind of crumble to the ground, and then the team crumble around him really kind of show what the Celtics team's all about. We've talked about them before. Being kind of a mentally weak team. I'm going to exclude Derek White because obviously he had the best series out of any Celtics player. You can maybe throw Rob Williams into that discussion if you wanted to, because he had some nice moments in this series. And again, Tatum was hit or miss, but that was kind of the big thing for me. Like Tatum goes down and it felt like right from that point, the team around him was kind of just like, all right, we lost our best guy, or our best guy's not 100%. Now we're doomed. Like that's an injury. Or that's something that should happen that you should rally around. And Brown, it obviously looked like he tried to, but was, just, it seemed like in over his head, which is kind of crazy. He finishes with 19, but of course the turnovers and everything was what people got on him for, and rightfully so. Nobody else stepped up again outside of Derek White. Marcus Smart finishes with 9, plays one of his worst games of the season. Al Horford, who really was just a defensive guy towards the end of the season, wasn't really scoring a lot. He has 8. Grant Williams gave you nothing off the bench. He had 3. Brogdon had 0 in 7 minutes. And that was the other big takeaway I had from this as well. Again, not to make excuses or anything, but the injuries start to pile up. You have a healthier Brogdon. You could probably afford to take Tatum out of the game, like at times, so he's not out there playing 41 minutes on a bum ankle. But that was kind of just the thing, too. It's like that Brogdon injury now is even magnified more with Tatum not being able to, you know, sustain the injury, or, you know, had the injury and not being able to play through it to a high ability. But that was the thing for me. It's like you kind of show what the character of this team was. Like Miami, I feel like if that's something that happens to Jimmy Butler, the team probably rallies around it. It's like, we got to go out there and play for our guy, play for our superstar and win the game for him. It seemed like the Celtics, at least to me, I don't know if you felt different or not, went the opposite direction and showed again that, like, you can't trust this team, because this is kind of the mentality that, or not kind of, it is the mentality that this team possesses.
Yeah, and they really just, like, it was one of those classic games, too, where Miami, like, every second or third shot would hit a big clutch three-year jump shot to stop any chance of a Celtics run.
Mm-hmm.
And the Celtics just had nothing in response. So, nope. Like, you're just playing catch-up the whole game. It sucks. Like, the team is definitely – I definitely fall into the camp. I think they're a little weak mentally, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. It's just one of those things looking forward. Now you have to do your best to fix it. Do I think if you play this game another time, you know, that type of situation they can bounce back from? Absolutely. But I don't know. I think you have to make some significant change because, you know, you're always in the mix, but it gets to a point where, you know.
You need that extra something to get you over the hump, and it just doesn't seem like this team possesses that for whatever reason.
Especially now with the Jaylen Brown situation, kind of gives you the best
mm-hmm.
scenario you've had in a while. I feel like to do that. So
yeah, yeah. I mean, we'll get to that
time trade chip. So
absolutely, we'll get to that in a second. Just two other that kind of you talking about the mindset change kind of goes into my fourth point that I had is you need to do something, whether that's off the floor with a move like maybe you were alluding to, at least get back to what you were again. You know, listening to. Obviously, we heard from multiple players after Game 7 or just throughout the series, whether it was Horford or Brogdon, talk about the team losing its defensive identity. Like, you need to get back to that, however that may be, whether it's you bring in some more defensive-minded guys, you try to just put that mindset back on the players that are already on the roster. Because if you look at it, they were talking about, I think it was the TNT broadcast crew, it might have been a local, the Celtics post-game, talking about last year, obviously the Celtics have one of the best defenses. They go to the NBA Finals. This year, they completely flipped the script, and whether that's on Mazzulla, in his mindset being more offensive mindset, or the players themselves wanted to do it. You have one of the best offenses in the league. You lose in the Eastern Conference Finals. And Miami, who was a pretty good defensive team all throughout these playoffs, they're going to the finals. You're not. And then this is something we've talked about during the game, off air, on air, whatever it may be. Just watching Game 7, Game 6, both of them, how many times are you going to chuck up threes before you start to realize you might want to maybe change the offense a little bit? You know, you go 16 for 77 over, you know, the last two games of the series, shoot 20% from three. Something has to change there. Like, I was listening to Felber and Maz, and they were playing some old sound of Joe Mazzulla talking about, you know, the best stat in the NBA is the three-point attempt stat, and that's what's going to, like, win you and lose you games. I don't know if I agree with that. Like, again, I think we've talked about this before. I've said the Celtics team, it feels like they think they're the Warriors when it comes to living and dying by the three. That works for a team like that because you have two generational shooters in Steph Curry and Klay Thompson. But I don't know. Some sort of mindset offensively needs to change where it would be nice to balance out the scoring a little bit instead of relying on as many threes to go down as you hope to have happen. And then when they don't, your entire offense just kind of crumbles.
Although, you know, shooting the three too much is my biggest complaint. So you're
going to have
none on your argument from me.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Okay. I'm glad we're in agreement. And then my last one too, the elephant in the room, as you mentioned, what do you do with Jaylen Brown? This game to me, we've talked about it before, you know, is he, and does he think he's a true number one? Can he be a true number one? I think this game might've showed that he can't. He's more so suited for to be a running mate of someone. You know, not a number one per se, but a 1A type of thing. By far his worst game in the NBA. This was an interesting tweet from NBA University. It said that Jaylen Brown in the regular season had 197 turnovers and 232 assists. In the postseason, he had 58 turnovers and 63 assists. I'll give credit to him, and maybe it's just him speaking at the podium, wanting to say what people want him to hear. Where he was talking about he got an opportunity to step up. He let his team down. He let his city down and the fans down. So I'll give him credit there, but look, something's got to change. We talked about it in the finals last year with the turnovers. Now this year, it seems like really nothing changed there. So like you said, it leads to a lot of questions of what the Celtics do with Jaylen Brown. I don't know if you have any thoughts that maybe lead into your overall thoughts from this series or this game on Jaylen Brown particularly, or anything that kind of, other than the egregious play, stood out from him with you.
Yeah, it was pretty bad, especially with the 8 turnovers. Mm-hmm. My mindset right now is I was originally of the belief up until last week, really, or the last few days, that you sell high on Derek White because of how amazing of a season he's had. But after seeing that he was one of your consistent contributors in 6 or 7, I'm off that.
And he's also only one of your heart guys that, like, seemed like he kind of gave a damn out there. So,
and I think trading a guy like Marcus Smart, and I know green teamers are going to fucking hate me for this.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a culture shock at this point, besides Jalen Brown, Marcus Smart.
Yep. That's like, the easier pill to swallow. I mean, maybe not, because like you said, there are people that live and die by Marcus Smart on this team. But again, he had, again, throughout the playoffs times where he looked like the guy he should, the pass first guy, score, you know, in little spurts, hit a couple of threes when you need him to. But again, like everyone did in this series, maybe on the outside of Derek White, he disappeared at times, definitely disappeared in game seven. You know, I personally throughout the season didn't think his defense was as great as it's been in the past. I mean, of course, when you win defensive player of the year last year, it's a tough thing to follow up, but
yeah,
look, it's going to be tough to swallow if the Celtics do want to move on from Jalen Brown. I mean, there are reasons, obviously, to do so with the contract stuff we'll get into in a second. Yeah. But I'm with you. Like, if there's a move to make first, Smart's been here the longest. He's the guy that I don't want to say has caused the most problems, because we don't know what goes on with that team, you know, off the court, behind the scenes and everything like that. So I don't want to make it seem like he's a head case or anything. But, like, you know, Jason Tatum is the guy. You know Jalen Brown is the two. Like, we've talked about it before. Does Marcus Smart know his role? You move him, maybe that sends a shock to the system, like, or, oh shit, they're finally doing something.
Yeah,
maybe like, no one on this team is safe, so we should wake up. Like, that's where I feel like your head's at.
At this point, too, Craddy Buckets trade expert checking in. Unrealistic option is Gilgeous Alexander.
Yes, realistic option very, for very unrealistic
is Darius Garland.
I don't know how realistic this one would be either.
See, I feel like it's more real. I'll say
it's more realistic than SGA. Gilgeous Alexander, absolutely.
But like the financials aren't going to be crazy far off. But, you know, in terms of like trading for a guy that's on like a rookie deal or something, or at least less than Garland. But I don't know. I feel like I've seen the name thrown out there, and I think it could work.
I don't know. Like, I don't know if Cleveland would want to move on from him just because of how great of a season they had last year going. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if there are teams that right now looking at, I know it's very early going into next season, or haven't even gone into next season yet, of course. But a team like Cleveland, to see a team like Boston have all these problems and all these questions now, maybe a team that was under them this season, we might want to add, you know, smell blood in the water here a little bit, that the Celtics might be crumbling a little bit. Maybe this is our chance. Like, I don't know if that's something you maybe, I mean, it's an even trade. Don't get me wrong. You get a star point guard for the Celtics and Cleveland gets a nice wing, but, go ahead.
The thing that makes sense is like Mitchell and Brown are very good friends.
True.
And Cleveland's very young. Like Jalen Brown isn't like, you know, 40 and Garland's like 20 or anything, but like
it's been around the block.
He's a little bit more of a veteran. I don't know. I think it could work, but you know, I said Craddy Buck is checking in, but I'm not, you know, I'm not the trade guru that some people are out there. So just throwing it out there.
I got you. My big thing too is we'll transit. It's a good transition into the Jalen Brown, his future talk. And obviously everyone with a pulse and access to the NBA trade machine on ESPN's website has the ability to make these Jalen Brown trades. Would the Celtics want to trade him within the conference is the only thing. Like that's a move. That's I think you kind of send him out west somewhere. Like obviously my mind goes to Houston, but what do they have? Yeah. I mean, if he wants to play with Udoka, everyone again is talking about Damian Lillard because his name likes to come up whenever there's Celtics trade rumors. Kevin O'Connor, the Ringer, had two packages talking about potentially trading Jalen Brown. One was for Damian Lillard, I think straight up. And the other one, which intrigues me a little more, is Anthony Simons, who had a good season this past year, career highs in pretty much every stat you could imagine. And then the number three overall pick in the draft, which I've seen some people, I can never remember his name. It's a funky name. It's like Scooter or Scoot or something.
Scoot Anderson.
Yeah, that's the one. A lot of people.
Three will be either him or Brandon Miller, right?
Yeah, yep. That's what people have kind of either get a wing to replace Jalen Brown with Miller or get a point guard to maybe replace Marcus Smart if you move him or just somewhere down the line. You do that. Nick Wright also had that, you know, a proposed trade of Jalen Brown and Danilo Gallinari to the Portland Trailblazers for Damian Lillard on the 23rd overall pick. Of course, the trade stuff stems from the possibility of Jalen Brown getting a 5-year, $295 million supermax this offseason, which after the play of the postseason and just this game seven, I will ask you the question. I feel like I kind of know the answer already. Is that a contract you would give Jalen Brown? Do you think he is worth that type of money? Because before you answer, if he were to sign that, I don't know if you knew this, it would make him the highest paid player in the NBA. more on a salary in AAV than the likes of Steph Curry, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, and Giannis Antetokounmpo, just to name a few.
Yeah, no. People who know me know I'm a big Jaylen Brown guy, but like that's just crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I also saw the idea of Brown in a deal for Lillard and Nurkic as well, or Nurkic.
Did not see that one. Was it just Brown or was there other pieces involved?
There's other pieces involved.
Okay.
The Lillard one, like, I like it from a player standpoint, but would they trade Brown for a 32-year-old player?
That's my thing. Like I said, I've seen a lot of people talk about Damian Lillard. You and I have talked about him off air. Like, again, great player. He would fill a massive need of a true point guard, you know, a late game scorer who doesn't seem to get, you know, too flustered in the big moment. Of course, we know Damian Lillard with all the big shots and everything, but that is the case. Is, I think, 33 going into next year, might be 34 going into next year. Look at his contract breakdown. He has a 2-year extension that starts in the 2025-2026 season. This is after he's already getting paid $45 million plus in 2023-2024, and then it bumps up to $48 million in change in 2024-2025. When that 2-year extension kicks in, the first year of it, he's going to get paid over $58.5 million, and then the final year of that contract, where he will be 36 years old, you'd be paying him 63 and change when it comes to that. So again, I'm with you. I love the player. It's a trade that works for both sides. The Trailblazers get a guy they can build around in Brown. Celtics get a point guard. I don't know if that's the route I go. I love Damian Lillard, don't get me wrong, but I don't know if I want to be paying a 36-year-old point guard that much money that late into his career.
I think the proposal I've seen that I like the most is for Simons in the third pick.
Same. I'm on the fence right now. I'm with you. I'm not giving Jaylen Brown that money. Of course, they don't have to give him the Supermax. They can kind of maneuver a little bit, try to give him maybe less. Of course, they would have to give him more than what he could get on the open market. If he is, for people that forget, if Jaylen Brown were to walk, he can assign a 4-year, $189 million. That puts him at right around $47.25 million. So the Celtics, if they don't want to offer him a Supermax, would probably have to go higher than the 47 that he can get on the open market. So probably right around like 5 and 250, which again, isn't the worst deal, because that's the market in the NBA. Like, people who might hear that and say, well, that's an insane amount of money, $50 million a year. That's what the market is. We talked about it in baseball before. You got to pay guys what they're worth. Jaylen Brown's not worth 5 and 295, not now, at least after the performance. If there were a trade to be made, I'm with you. That's the one, the Simons, because again, he's young, he's controllable. He's under contract through, I believe, the 2025-26 season, where he'll only be 26 when that contract is up. And like I said earlier, coming off a career year in pretty much everything, average over 20 points per game, good 3-point shooter, good field goal shooter, pretty decent from the free throw line. That's a big thing that people forget about Jaylen Brown, or maybe don't forget that he does struggle from the line a bit. But again, Simons is a guy that can play both guard positions, gives you some versatility there. Some other ones that I saw too, just really quick, I wanted to get thoughts on. I saw some people say maybe you do Jaylen Brown for Zach LaVine from Chicago. If you don't like Jaylen Brown's postseason performance, maybe diving into Zach LaVine's numbers and the fact that he only put up 15 points in the play-in game against Miami this season. He was atrocious in that game, 15 points, 6 of 21 field goals, 0 of 6 from deep. And 3 of 5 from the free throw line with 5 turnovers. So if you don't like Jaylen Brown's turnovers, I don't know why you would like Zach LaVine's. And then one career playoff series against the Milwaukee Bucks, he's averaged just under 20 points per game, shot 42% from the field. So not great numbers. And then the other one was Karl Anthony Towns, who, if you want to just continue to go with the same vibes of this team of being, you know, weak-minded and soft, Karl Anthony Towns is the guy to bring in there, because he's a center that, at least in my opinion, doesn't really play like a center that much. So those are two trades I'm out. I don't know if you feel any differently with those two players, how much you know about either one of them, but what's your kind of thought process there?
Yeah, I don't want either of them. Zach LaVine gets hurt all the time.
Yes, he does.
And Karl Anthony Towns never plays good in the playoffs.
The only reason I didn't bring up the LaVine stuff is because he actually did play more games than Brown this season, which was surprising. I didn't know that. I would have thought it would have been less. Of course, yeah. Brown did miss some time with the face fracture and everything. But I'm with you too. Like, LaVine is a guy that I feel like is notoriously injured year after year, it seems like.
Yeah, agreed.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it is going to be an interesting thing to watch with Jaylen Brown. Of course, again, like, a guy that is very highly liked here. I know that probably the recency bias is a lot of people that will want him out of there, or out of Boston rather, but we'll have to wait and see on him. The other future that might be uncertain, or, you know, maybe it is, depending on how you look at the reports and everything is Joe Mazzulla is a guy that caught a lot of fire during the postseason, especially at the end with how things went. You know, he showed some improvements, especially after going down 0-3. Like, there's only really nowhere to go but up. But some people think Joe Mazzulla should get fired after what happened. Shams Charania had a report yesterday that apparently Joe Mazzulla, his new contract, of course, that he signed midweek or when he was named the Celtics head coach, had the interim tag removed. Apparently has 3 years and $14 million left on it. So I don't know if that's a contract the Celtics would like to get rid of. And then there are some questions with the coaching staff. Today, Gary Washburn of the Globe had it. The Celtics are expected to lose three assistant coaches to Ime Udoka's staff in Houston. Not really a surprise there. The three being Ben Sullivan, Aaron Miles, and Mike Moser. And then Boston's bench already has lost Will Hardy this season to Houston, to Utah. And then Damon Stoudemire to Georgia Tech. So it is a already thin coaching staff to begin with. I don't know if maybe getting rid of the head coach would be the best decision too. There are reports, of course, that the Celtics are looking to add more veterans, which makes a lot of sense. This is from Brian Robb of Mass Live, saying the expectation is the team will add more experience to Mazzulla's staff this summer, with former Rockets coach Steven Silas named as a top candidate to join the staff. You've been pretty vocal about Joe Mazzulla, at least to me. I don't know if you have shared those thoughts on the show. I can't remember correctly. But what are your thoughts on him moving forward? Did he show you anything these last couple of games after, of course, they went down 0-3 to maybe save his career in your mind? Or are you still out of, again, I can't remember if you were on the fire Mazzulla train after going down 0-3. What's your kind of overall thoughts on him?
I'm on like the being cool with firing him train.
Mm-hmm.
But
what about a step down? Like maybe push?
Yeah, could step down.
Okay.
That would be good. I kind of feel like the Celtics would be like, oh, he's losing all these assistants, so we're not going to fire him. We're just going to build around him and, you know, hope for better things. So
nope.
I'm at the point where I don't expect him to be fired at all now.
No.
With the developments about the assistant coaches. But if he was, I wouldn't really care that much.
Fair enough.
I'd be okay with that.
Again, I think the consensus was at times he was over his head this season. But, you know, we've talked about this before too, I think, on the show. Like, I don't put the 0-3 going down 0-3 and then the collapse solely on him. Like, I put that put it more on the players for not showing up. And again, maybe if they did show up thinking that they were just the overall better team and not have to play. Yes, he did have his faults at times in this series. So if anything were to move, like I wouldn't outright fire the guy. I don't think they're going to. Maybe you see if he steps down, but I think, and I'm glad they're doing this or looking to do it. I think the right move here is to bring some experience in, get some guys surrounding him that have been there before, kind of know the ins and outs of things. If they struggle again next year, and he looks again like he just can't seem to get it, then I think you have all the case in the world to get rid of him. But like, for what happened to the guy getting thrown in the first week, day before the season, and getting the team to game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals? Yes, we crapped on him a little bit this season, but you can't really knock him for that type of performance in your first year as a head coach, being as young as he is. You hope he makes improvements moving forward, and you hope the team puts a good supporting cast around him to help make those improvements.
Agreed.
Yep. All right. So then that's kind of it with the Celtics stuff. Again, those are the two big things, the futures of Brown and Mazzulla. Again, if you want him gone or not. The other thing, there is an NBA Finals to maybe talk about just a little bit. I think, as we talked about before, you and I over text, I personally think it's going to be one of the most boring finals we've ever seen. I think it's a finals that will be over pretty quickly if you've watched one side of it, because Jokic and Denver has just absolutely dominated. So I'll defer to you. Do you have any overall thoughts? Maybe that is some things that stand out to you going into this series, some thoughts you may, or some things you're maybe looking forward to maybe make this a series, or you think it's going to be over pretty quick?
I think the Heat are going to be a bit of a pain in the ass, but lose in 6 to the Nuggets.
Okay.
Jokic's first shot at a championship. I know the MVP stuff doesn't really bother him, but like, that's just more motivation. Like, oh, I didn't win MVP, but I'm going to win the finals. Like, who gives a shit? Like, extra reason to be like, yeah, I don't give a shit about the MVP.
Yeah, you can take your trophy. I'll get my ring. Exactly.
Yeah, I would be very shocked if the Heat go all the way. I think it's going to be pretty hard for them to stop Jokic.
As do I. I've been talking to a couple friends of mine. Didn't have a great series, didn't have a bad series, but I think this is the series where Bam Adebayo gets exposed as not being a true center. I think you and I have talked about that before too. Eric brought that up, where this is, I think, with Jokic's size, his ability, it's going to look like a guy playing against like a child, because I just the talent discrepancy is so crazy there. My other kind of talking points are just thoughts on, you know, can Miami's bench players continue to have their unbelievable stretch? We saw at times you know, Caleb Martin. What did you, I was going to ask you, I don't know if you saw it or had any overall thoughts on him not getting MVP, because there were some people that talked about that. Of course, Jimmy Butler beat him out 5-4 for the Eastern Conference, or the Larry Bird Trophy, whatever it is. Any thoughts there, or just not really, kind of shrug your shoulders and move on?
Yeah, I don't really have any crazy thoughts, to be honest.
Fair enough. I don't know if I said it on the show before when they did it last year, but I had this conversation with my dad the other night. Like, to me, that trophy just screams just another piece of hardware for a superstar to get, because I feel like it's especially that my point rings true now with no role player, bench guy, number two guy is ever going to win that award, because you expect a superstar player to play well in a playoff series. So that's just more stat padding and more awards to give the superstars. But in this case, Caleb Martin absolutely should have won it. He got robbed, if for anybody that really has any strong opinions towards that. But that's the thing for me, you know, can guys like Max Strus, Caleb Martin, Gabe Vincent, can they continue to play really well? Because I think that might be the only thing that can save Miami in this series, is if their role players outplay the Nuggets. And then Tyler Hero, I think, is projected to play game 3 if he's able to come back from that hand injury. You know, how much does he factor into this series at all? But it's really going to come down to the two superstars, in my opinion, Jokic versus Butler. In their career matchup, StatMuse had this: Jimmy Butler, 22.9 points per game, a shooting clip of 46, 33, and 90%, of course, from the field three and the free throw line, to go along with 5.1 rebounds and 5.7 assists when he plays Denver. When Jokic plays Miami, they've held him in check scoring wise, you know, just 19.4 points per game, but 9.6 rebounds, 6.4 assists, and a shooting clip of 53, 46, and 84%. The two times the two teams matched up this season, Denver won both games, 124 to 119 in Denver, where 8 out of 10 Nuggets who played finished in double figures. And then back in February in Miami, they beat them to 112 to 108, where 7 of 9 Nuggets finished in double figures. So they seemingly know how to score against the Miami Heat. And then another stat to just throw it out there: Miami has lost 9 of their last 10 matchups against Denver, including those two losses this season. So all signs point to Denver. You were on the Denver train. You said Nuggets in 6. I'm going one less game than you, Nuggets in 5. I wanted to pick a sweep, but Miami, like you said, they're stingy. They'll play hard. So they'll probably steal at least one of those games at home. The other thing to watch out for too, I did not know this, is the Nuggets are a perfect 8-0 at home. So that might factor in as well.
Yeah, they are pretty spotless at home. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, at this point, Nuggets. I want the Nuggets to win.
I do too. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know if you feel the same way about Jimmy Butler as I do. Like, I've said it before, where I wish the Celtics, specifically Tatum and Brown, have his mindset of, like, I'm just going to come out here and just beat the living crap out of you because I'm the best basketball player on this court. And just that type of, dog mentality. I like him, but I can't bring myself to root for anybody else on the Heat. I can't stand the team. Can't stand Eric Spoelstra. Hate Pat Riley. Like, that whole, I don't hate the Heat culture thing, because again, I wish the Celtics would play with that type of mentality, but I can't root for that team in the slightest. And not to crap on, like I said earlier, like, this is going to be a terrible finals rating wise, but you know, if there's Nuggets or Heat fans listening, but like, the storylines you could have had of like the Celtics, Lakers, no matter what team got there, it's just, I can't imagine this is a series that's going to do well in the ratings, because, like, it's not the two biggest basketball markets they have going right now.
No, it is not.
Maybe that'll change after the finals. Like you said, if Jokic, two-time MVP winner, gets his first ring, then maybe some more people will tune into the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah, I agree. On to some quick hockey talk. The cup final is set. And it's what everybody expected. It's the Panthers and the mm-hmm. Golden Knights.
Yeah, another 8 seed making the championship.
A real shame to see the Hurricanes get swept. I think we talked about it a little bit last week. Real shame, though. Mm-hmm.
You hate to see it.
Mm-hmm. Really do. But Vegas closed it out in epic fashion against the Stars with a dominant 6-2 victory in Game 6. Game 6, 6 goals.
There. Very nice.
Bing, bang, see what boom.
You did there.
And, we got a second wildcard team versus the number one seed. So that's pretty interesting. Not something mm-hmm. you see super often. It should be a good matchup. Like, one thing as a Massachusetts native I'm excited about is the Cup's coming to Massachusetts regardless, whether it's with Jack Eichel or Colin White.
I didn't even think of that. I completely blanked on
Jack Eichel. Colin White from my hometown as well.
Ooh.
So...
you have to be home that day he shows up with the cup if they win.
Right, be right in the heart. That'd be very cool. Maybe the first time ever That'd be pretty nuts. Might be the first ever. But Panthers and Golden Knights, honestly, pretty excited about this matchup. Some people have complained about the ratings too.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, I get it, but I mean, the Panthers are the Cinderella team, and the Golden Knights, it would be their first ever. You know, they had a crushing defeat at the hands of the Capitals in their inaugural season. Now they're looking for revenge. Jack Eichel could potentially start the legacy. His legacy before Connor McDavid. If you told people that in 2015, you might have got some
that is wild, eye. Yeah.
But it could happen. I'm excited for this matchup. I'm not one of those people that's like, oh, I want the Golden Knights to lose because of Bruce Cassidy. Would I rather see the Panthers lose?
I'm on the flip side. About
Bruce Cassidy?
Uh-huh.
Yes, but I'm not.
Well, I've seen some people on Twitter that are already muting. I think Sarah Griffin was one of them. She muted just anything Bruce Cassidy related for the next however like month or 30 days or whatever. I'm like, that's kind of funny, but I am one of those people that, as I said before, I'm rooting for the Golden Knights just out of spite because I want to see just kind of Bruins Twitter maybe burn down or just the reactions of people losing their minds if he's able to and just the storyline of that I think would be kind of funny for a little bit of sports talk.
That's fair. I have a future on Matthew Tkachuk to win Conn Smythe, so I hope he goes off and somehow makes a better case for himself than Bobrovsky, which might be hard to do. As Bobrovsky's 11-2 throughout these playoffs, he's got a 2.21 goals against and a .935 save percentage and one shutout. On the other side, Aiden Hill's doing pretty well himself, 7-3 with a 2.07 goals against average, .937 save percentage and two shutouts. Pretty good for a guy he got for a fourth round pick last year.
I'd say so.
Works out pretty well. Guy that's a pending free agent this summer as well. So he's got a lot riding for his financial future on this series. But I went back and forth on this a lot, but I'm just not going to doubt the Panthers at this rate.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't gone well. So
yep.
I'm not going to do it.
We've talked about it plenty of times. I got the Cinderella feel to him right now, the dream team, whatever you want to call them. Like they're, so I said it when they played the Bruins, like, I hate this team. Like, I hate how they play. Like, I hate some of the players on it just because of the style they play. But, like, I've said it, I think, last episode, too. The further into the playoff you watch them, it's like, man, that's a team that plays it right. Like, they play physical. They have skill guys. They're skill players. Like Tkachuk, as you mentioned, have stepped up tremendously. I don't want to say Bobrovsky's the new Binnington because Bobrovsky's a better goalie. But, like, another case where it seems like a guy kind of sold his soul to the devil and is playing out of his mind right now, kind of out of nowhere. But they've got a lot of things, like you said, riding for them that they could very well steal this from Vegas, who is probably the all-around more talented team, if I'd have to say.
Yeah, and Matthew Tkachuk right now is the ultimate heel, too.
Mm-hmm.
And he just scores big goal after big goal. He scored two goals in the clincher.
Yeah, make sure the puck's not on his stick with, like, 30 seconds to go or whatever, because it's probably going to end up pretty bad for you.
Yeah, he's nails. I have a lot of respect for him, and I've gained respect for this team as it's gone.
Absolutely.
On. I'm going Panthers in seven. Like I said, I'm not betting against them. I do think this series will go six minimum.
Yep.
And I'm rooting for seven because selfishly I just want as many hockey games left because it's almost over.
It's gonna be a more entertaining series than I think the NBA finals for sure. If I had to pick the two, like I could care less about either one of them. Maybe again, that's just the spite in me of not having a Boston team in it. But I think it's going to be the more entertaining. I think it's probably the more evenly matched out of the two of them. Like you said, it is an 8 seed going up against a 1 seed again. But Florida, not to say Miami hasn't shown, you know, their strength throughout the playoffs, but these two teams are, I think, really evenly matched for all the reasons you said. But I don't know, maybe to be different from you, I don't want to keep using the spite thing, but I think this is where Florida's run ends. I think the Golden Knights will find a way with, you know, their more skilled players to pull something out. I'm with you, though, at least six the minimum. If it doesn't go seven, I'll be very surprised just because of how these two teams have stylistically played throughout the playoffs this season. Yes, Florida has run through people, so that might be contradictory, but like these two heavy hitters, you know, finally coming together, it's going to have to give.
Yeah. And talk about two fun places for championship festivities. We've seen it in Miami, but we haven't seen it in Vegas. A summer of cup celebrations in Vegas would be pretty nuts.
I don't know. I wanted to get your thoughts on real quick. I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No worries.
But I had this thought the other day. I was talking to my dad about it. I don't know if it's an uncomfortable conversation to have, but if the Panthers win, do we have to start talking about the state of Florida, which is crazy? The state of Florida being like a huge hockey hotbed with now Florida's success, Tampa Bay's success over the years. Like, obviously, you don't think of Florida as a big hockey state. Maybe just for the – at least I don't for the geographical Any thoughts there? Like, obviously people will think of like Canada, the big markets, Boston stuff, Detroit stuff like that for hockey. I don't know. Florida might be creeping up there, which is kind of, at least to me, crazy to think about.
Yeah, I mean, the Lightning and the Panthers, you have to give them their flowers, I guess. So,
sure.
Yeah, I think there's some merit to that. And, of course, they got going on with the Heat, too. They're, mm-hmm. some championships going with the Bucks. The Marlins, no.
not for a long time.
If we're talking about
more Dolphins, Florida. Maybe. Tua stays healthy.
Tampa Bay Rays.
Maybe, yeah. They first team to 40 wins, I think, today or yesterday. Yeah, I saw that on Twitter. So they're kind of running through it right now. Who knows?
See what happens. Also, friend of mine, Kaylee Allard, who does social for the Golden Knights, will be cool to see them win and her be a part of the Stanley Cup festivities. So shout out to her.
That would be cool.
Yeah, that would be cool to see. But yeah, it should be a fun series. I'm looking forward to it and just hoping for seven. If you have as many hockey games left to, pass the time before the drafts and all that fun stuff. Mm-hmm. And your first mock draft. So,
yeah, I got to get on that.
I can't wait.
Yes.
Can't wait to see who you have the Bruins taking at pick 91.
Oh, God. Is that when their first pick is? All right. So I'll have to do a deep dive and ask around and see, hey, who are the best? Give me your top 200 hockey players in this draft. Yep. So I got something to go off of.
There we go. That's going to wrap it up for hockey, though. And to wrap up with football, DeAndre Hopkins finally got released about 3 or 4 days ago now. The rumor mill has been swirling. We've seen the Chiefs in the mix. We've seen the Bills. We've seen the Patriots, the Browns. I also think the Vikings could be a fit
as well. That'd be sneaky.
They did draft Jordan Addison, but
what I don't makes know you think that
could work with the cap. You lose Adam Thielen, you add a rookie, but I mean, Justin Jefferson, DeAndre Hopkins, Jordan Addison, and KJ Osborne.
That'd be disgusting. Dude,
for a team that really wants to get over the hump, like, trying to prove themselves and, make a run for once. I don't know. I wonder if the Vikings sneak in. I don't think it'll happen because I feel like we would have heard their name, but I wonder if they try.
Do you have any faith in the Patriots? I did see a thing that said, well, obviously that the Bills and the Chiefs are the heavy hitters. They're the two teams that you've seen come up quite a bit. Don't have the most money to offer. I thought I saw a tweet that said if the Patriots were to get involved, they could offer him the most money out of the teams that were interested. That's the thing for me. The Patriots want to shell out the most money to get a guy that Bill Belichick clearly likes. Of course, it'd probably be some awkwardness between him and Bill O'Brien. I feel like maybe they'd have to be a meeting to patch some stuff up there. So maybe that sways him to not want to come at all. But the people that like to, focus on social media stuff, he did post a video of him working out at a gym. Don't know if it was in New England, probably wasn't. But he did post on his Instagram story watching the Patriots 28-3 come back against the Falcons. I saw some people, of course, kind of started losing their minds over that. Me personally, I feel like that was just what was on the TV at the gym at the time. So I don't know how much you want to read into that. I don't know if you kind of had any thoughts on if that stands out to you or just like, he's just at the gym working out and that happened to be on TV.
A little, but like, mm-hmm. It's nothing until it's something.
Exactly.
Most recently from him was tweeting a bunch of like the monkey emojis.
I
like
did see that today.
Hands over his eyes and a couple others. So, maybe like that's like another like eyes emojis. Like if you want to
side eye
emojis instead. Mm-hmm. I mean, he did that. So maybe something's getting close. So, but for me, it feels like the Chiefs.
Yeah. That's so like
gonna go to the Chiefs. So what? They lost Hardman, Smith-Schuster, and they drafted Rashee Rice.
I don't to go along
anything
with
else. They're getting Justin Ross back.
I don't think they need anything else.
The video is going around today that Patrick Mahomes seems to be developing some chemistry with the former Clemson receiver. If the Chiefs can do it, they should do it, and they might just do it because it sounds like that's what. They're in the mix. If I'm the freaking Titans too, like get any receiving talent there.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I just don't know if he would want to go there.
Oh, I don't know what the Titans deal is. I don't know if they want to actually compete or if they're stuck in like some sort of quasi rebuild or what the deal is. I don't know. I don't think they know what direction they're going in right now. I'm with you though. It's the Chiefs 100%. We've talked about it before that there's, I don't think there's any way Mahomes goes into, again, it's Patrick Mahomes. He makes everyone around him great, but I can't believe that the Chiefs would go into the the regular season with the type of receiving core they have right now, because there are some questions there. Like, at least last year going in, like you said, you had Juju, you had Hardman, who, you know, not the greatest players in the world, but you knew what they were. You know, Sky Moore might be a nice player. You don't really know, though. Maybe with more reps, you'll see that. They got Kadarius Toney, who's, you know.
Forgot about Toney, yeah.
Yeah, oh, he's easy to forget about because he's never out there. Like, that's not a knock on the guy, but, like, he is a walking question mark with the injury concerns. So you got to think, you know, it all comes down to, does Hopkins want a ring chase? You know, if the Chiefs aren't going to offer him the most money, they definitely offer him the most or the best opportunity to win. Like that, again, like I said, that's the only way the Patriots really get serious about this, is if they want to shell out a decent amount of money and try to get him here any way, shape, or form. But I can't see that happening with how they tend to operate, especially at that position.
Yeah, and like for ring chasing purposes, I don't see why he wouldn't at this point. He's what, like 33, and he's played on terrible teams the large majority of his career.
Yep.
But like, I think if you're the Patriots, you have to have belief that you can shed some cap space by, I imagine they would move Devontae Parker.
That'd be my guess. Yep.
So are they willing to do that? I don't know. I just feel like it's one of those players that it's going to be exploratory interest, and that's going to be it. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to give a boring answer and think he goes to the Chiefs or the Bills.
Fair enough. I think it's the right answer. I think
he's just going to go to the Chiefs, though, if I had to pick one.
You have, because I was looking at it, going back at the kind of the discussions about him, who he wants to play with. I mean, obviously, Mac Jones is not on his quarterback list. If people miss that, the quarterbacks he said he'd play with, or he'd most like to catch passes from, rather, Josh Allen, Jalen Hurts, Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, and Justin Herbert. Him going to the Chargers, they could make that work, would be a disgusting offense. Like him, Keenan Allen, the Eagles too, yeah, absolutely. But then the other comment was what he's looking for in a new team, a quarterback that loves to play the game and brings everyone on board with them. I don't know if Mac Jones falls into that category or not. I'd probably lean towards probably not, because there's some uncertainty with him, of course. But the other two don't bode terribly for the Patriots. A great defense. He said defense wins championships, got to have a great D-line. I don't know if you consider the Patriots great, but they have a pretty good defense, as we've seen over the years. And then stable management, because he says he's been through four GMs in his career. Again, depending on how you look at the Patriots management and if it's quote unquote stable or not, there is the Bill Belichick connection. He seems to like Bill. Bill seems to like him. So maybe that kind of, like I said, bodes well for the Patriots. I don't know if you had any thoughts on that to end the show or wrap anything up.
Maybe he just really likes the name Bill. Makes you think.
Maybe.
Bill O'Brien, Bill Belichick.
Well, that wouldn't be great then, because there's a football team that's pretty much named the Bill. Or just add,
oh,
yes.
Oh, fuck. So, I didn't even think of that.
Oh, no.
God damn it.
He's going to teaming up with Josh Allen.
Oh, I put myself in a corner there.
Yep. Oh, well.
God damn it. Man, maybe there might be some other Bills in that organization, too.
Probably, yeah.
But yeah, no real additional thoughts from me. I think that's going to wrap it up for our show today.
Yep, nothing too crazy.
Yep. Thank you so much for listening. Our most listened to episode in a while last week, so thank you for that. You can follow us on any main podcasting platform. You can follow us on Twitter as well, at @Mike_Karate, @Ryan_Salvaggio, and the show @SoundKaratePod. We're also on TikTok, and you can follow the full press coverage of YouTube and Twitch channels. But yeah, that's going to wrap it up. Finals getting started by the time we're recording next week, so that's exciting. Stay safe, stay healthy, be nice to people, all that good stuff, and we'll talk to you next week. Peace out.